to high school students as a residential program outside of Chicago. Most of my students were entering their sophomore year of high school and had their sights set on being engineers or chemists or gynecologists, and they or their parents thought they'd benefit from some additional writing practice. And so they began the course with a sense of dutiful reluctance. We had 5 hours a day, 5 days a week together. And so I wanted the course to be as enjoyable and as estranging as possible. I wanted to present writing as an experiment, as a puzzle, as a series of small decisions, instead of as an enormous nebulous skill that could be a gatekeeper between them and their dreams. One exercise I had them do was to write a poem that used multi-sensory information to convey their hometown. I challenged them to steer away from describing their emotional response to their hometown, how it felt to be there, or narrating memories they had. I wanted them to pick a spot and explain how it smelled, how it looked at a particular time of day, what they could hear there, what the texture of it was like, the stones that made up a bridge over a creek, unsticking leaves from a car windshield after a storm, whatever they thought of. I asked them to convey a sense of place through its smallest components. One of my students was from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and wrote a poem about what it's like to live in Michigan. It reminded me of a poem called A Primer by the poet Bob Hickok, which you have in your order of service. And so I pulled up the poem on our projection screen, and we talked about some of the kinds of description that the poems, Bob Hickok's poem and my student's poem, had in common. A Primer begins, "I remember Michigan fondly as the place I go to be in Michigan. The right hand of America waving from maps, or the left pressing into clay a mold to take home from kindergarten to mother. I lived in Michigan 43 years. The state bird is a chained factory gate. The state flower is Lake Superior, which sounds egotistical, though it is merely cold and deep as truth. A Midwesterner can use the word truth, can sincerely use the word sincere." The final lines of the poem read, "We are a people who by February want to kill the sky for being so gray and angry at us. What did we do?" is the state motto. There's a day in May when we're all tumblers, gymnastics is everywhere, and daffodils are asked by young men to be their wives. When a man elopes with a daffodil, you know where he's from. In this way, I have given you a primer. Let us all be from somewhere. Let us tell each other everything we can. To be from somewhere, for Hickok, is to be part of a collective experience of place. And that place makes a people. We are a people who by February want to kill the sky for being so gray, he writes. Where being in Michigan shapes its residents as a family or a cultural tradition might. It's a strange poem. There's a day in May where we're all tumblers. A day I imagine to be bright, although he doesn't say that. Hickok starts the poem speaking from his own single voice. "I remember Michigan," he writes. But here he speaks collectively. We are a people, where part of remembering Michigan is remembering the we it makes him part of. There are a number of instances of something we might call gratitude in the poem. The tumbling because of the day in May, the fond remembrance of a place that isn't uniformly lovely, but it's the giving at the end of the poem that I want to pay attention to. "In this way, I have given you a primer," he writes. A primer in what? I ask myself. A primer in being from Michigan? A primer in making a place more familiar, for making it a little strange? A primer in being from somewhere? A primer in the everything that we might tell each other? He has given it to us. The poem, he says, is a mode of giving. By writing a poem that we read, Hickok can give us something, something that encourages a line of giving. "Let us," its final lines both begin, invoking both the call to prayer of "let us pray," but also the secular "let us break bread together." a call to fellowship in either case. Giving here occasions fellowship, where we might give each other a primer in where we're from. We might give ourselves the permission, the time, the focus to be from somewhere, to pay attention to the places we are from and what makes them singular. Where his giving, so the poem says, can occasion our own. But what is giving? In its old English definition, it means to bestow or commit, as well as to deliver to another, where giving is an act that happens between people. We might give someone a hug to indicate we're pleased to see them. We might give an account of a situation, or give advice, or give up, or give to those in need, or consider our annual giving, or not give a hoot about something, or give our time, or give a gift, or teach a man to fish instead of giving him one, or give a mouse a cookie and confront the consequences. Or your knee might give out, or we might wonder at this moment of the significance of give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. Perhaps as the holiday season begins, some of us will begin to think about gifts to give, or we'll think about the gift we're given of the return of the sun on winter solstice. We'll think about giving ourselves some time to spend in the ways we wish for and don't get enough of, with our families, or just at home, resting, collecting ourselves for the coming year. This is a time of year that draws attention to the giving we do each day. Perhaps some of us gave thanks this week. Thanksgiving asks us to give differently than we do at other times of year, to give thanks where we might, day to day, give time or money or patience or effort. The act of giving thanks is perplexing to me, because it occasions the opportunity to show gratitude, but I have to figure out myself to whom to show it and how. There's the tradition, not in my family, but perhaps in others, of saying what you are grateful for on Thanksgiving, where the holiday gives the opportunity to acknowledge gratitude. We know that conveying gratitude is psychologically beneficial, that by recognizing a greater good and communicating our thanks to others, we feel more connected. We feel like it's possible for us and for others to have some of what we need from the world. The researcher and advocate of positive psychology, Martin Seligman, who is a great favorite of my mother, has advocated for activities such as writing a short letter to a person to whom you were thankful and delivering it to them. The sense of friendship is accompanied by psychological benefit, he argues, where participants who engaged in this and other exercises experienced lasting happiness and a decrease in depressive symptoms. At the time of year when daylight is short and it's less pleasant to spend time outside, conveying gratitude may be a medical necessity as well as a generous act. Even so, while I understand and believe in the benefits of occasional moments of communicating gratitude, a letter to someone who has been helpful to me, a day of service, an afternoon of volunteering, a loaf of bread baked and given to a friend, I've been interested in the ways of communicating gratitude within the daily structure of my life, ways that I overlook that happen already, ways I could change how I read or think about my life, which often feels more possible than making a large change in my habits. In thinking about gratitude, I've been asking myself, how do I experience gratitude on a daily basis? If I use Thanksgiving as an opportunity to be attentive to gratitude, how would I most want to convey it? While it's helpful to have a day or two at this time of year that follows a different pattern, it makes me especially aware of the fact that daily patterns are really hard to change. The day for each of us is full as it is. What I want to focus on for a moment is less how we might behave differently to convey our gratitude, and more on how we might recognize the primer in gratitude that we're given each day. I started asking myself, how do other people and institutions in my life convey gratitude already in their daily lives? How can I learn from them? Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay, Friendship, begins, "We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken." He goes on later in the essay to write, "The essence of friendship is entireness, a total magnanimity and trust." He argues, as Seligman does, that we have more to give than we feel we might. We might be restored by being kind when we feel too depleted to give anything. Gratitude might be something we need each other to do to be able to communicate. In the essay Heroism, Emerson communicates a sense of giving that's not unlike Seligman's. He writes, "The magnanimous know very well that they who give time or money or shelter to the stranger, so it be done for love and not for ostentation, do, as it were, put God under obligation to them, so perfect are the compensations of the universe. In some way, the time they seem to lose is redeemed, and the pains they seem to take remunerate themselves. These men fan the flame of human love and raise the standard of civil virtue among mankind." At the core of what Emerson describes is exchange. Gratitude may be as basic as earnest communication with another person, and an act or a word that communicates you're pleased to see someone else and that they exist in this world with you. It seems that gratitude is a collective enterprise. It's something that we have to help each other do. Maybe the power of giving thanks isn't in communicating the content of what it is you're thankful for, but the fact of sharing it with others. It is an act of gratitude, then, to ask another person about their day, and then to listen attentively, to give your attention, which is its own kind of thanks. Growing up in this church, I was excited by the way that USG celebrates events. I remember many Christmas Eve services, Lingelbach dinners, service auctions, and Days of the Dead. Part of the job of a faith-based community is to recognize holidays and to find other moments for the community to come together in ways that take us out of our daily routines. What was probably more important to me, coming to church every Sunday in the late 90s and early and mid-2000s, was having the opportunity to be part of a community and to be reminded of the regular and routine space we need to make for one another in order for the community to function. Attending USG is a way of communicating our gratitude to the church itself and to its members. We participate in this space because we want there to be a space for us to participate in, a community in which to be regularly greater than ourselves. Part of each of our day-to-day lives is spent engaging in activities that make it possible for us to do the work we are each called on to do. I'd like to offer the idea that gratitude is part of that basic human maintenance, that part of the way we believe that there's the potential for a world we'd like to live in is by creating that world in the smallest ways, with every act of patience, with every small act of listening or offering help. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. Let us make our community somewhere we want to be from. Let us tell each other everything we can, and let us listen when we do.